Chapter 24. A New Commitment. Exhausted from 2 days of riding, Gawain sat atop Challenge on a low hill southwest of Tarvalen. This countryside should have been green with spring's arrival, but the hillside before him bore only scraggly dead weeds, slain by the winter snows. Tufts of yew and blackwood poked up here and there, breaking the brown landscape. He counted more than a few stands that were now populated only by stumps. A war camp devoured trees like hungry wood gnarls, using them for arrows, fires, buildings, and siege equipment. Gawain yawned. He'd pushed hard through the night. Bryn's war camp was well dug in here, and was a bustle of motion and activity. An army this large spawned organized chaos at best. A small band of mounted cavalry could travel light, as Gawain's younglings had. A force like that could grow to several thousand and remain lean. Expert horsemen, like the Saldaeans, were said to manage larger bands of 7,000 or 8,000 while keeping their mobility. But a force like the one below was a different beast entirely. It was an enormous, sprawling thing, in the shape of an enormous bubble with a smaller camp at its center. That probably held the Aes Sedai. Bryn also had forces occupying all of the bridge towns on both sides of the River Arinon, effectively cutting off the island from ground supply. The army squatted near Tarvalen like a spider eyeing a butterfly hovering just outside of its web. Lines of troops rode in and out patrolling, purchasing food, running messages. Dozens upon dozens of squads, some mounted, others walking. Like bees leaving the hive while others swarmed back in. The eastern side of the main camp was crowded with a mishmash of shanties and tents, the normal riffraff of camp followers that collected around an army. Nearby, just inside the main war camp boundary, a wooden palisade, perhaps 50 yards across, rose in a tall ring, probably a command post. Gawain knew he had been seen by Bryn's scouts as he approached, yet none had stopped him. They probably wouldn't unless he tried to ride away. A single man wearing a decent gray cloak and trousers with a lacing shirt of white wasn't of much interest. He could be a sellsword coming to ask for a place in the ranks. He could be a messenger from a local lord sent to complain about a group of scouts. He could even be a member of the army. While many of those in Bryn's force wore uniforms, many others just wore a simple yellow band on their coat sleeves, not yet able to pay for proper insignia to be sewn on. No, a single man approaching the army was not a danger. A single man riding away from it, however, was cause for alarm. A man coming to the camp could be friend, foe, or neither. A man who inspected the camp, then rode away, was almost certainly a spy. So long as Gawain didn't leave before making his intentions known, Bryn's outriders would be unlikely to bother him. Light, but he could use a bed. He'd spent a restless 2 nights, sleeping only a couple of hours during each one, wrapped in his cloak. He felt irritable and cranky, partially just at himself for refusing to go to an inn, lest he be chased by the younglings. He blinked bleary eyes and spurred Challenge down the incline. He was committed now. No, he'd been committed the moment he'd left sleet behind in Dorlan. By now the younglings knew of their leader's betrayal. Sleet wouldn't allow them to waste time searching. He'd tell them what he knew. Gawain wished he could convince himself that they'd be surprised. But he'd received more than one frown or look of confusion regarding the way he spoke of Elida and the Aes Sedai. The White Tower didn't deserve his allegiance. But the younglings, he could never go back to them now. It itched at him. This was the first time his wavering had been revealed to a large group. Nobody knew that he'd helped Swan escape, nor was it widespread knowledge that he'd dallied with Egwene. Yet leaving had been the right thing to do. For the first time in months, his actions matched his heart. Saving Egwene. That was something he could believe in. He approached the outskirts of camp, keeping his face impassive. He hated the idea of working with the rebel Aes Sedai almost as much as he had hated abandoning his men. These rebels were no better than Elida. They were the ones who had propped Egwene up as an Ammerlin, as a target. Egwene, a mere accepted, a pawn. If they failed in their bid for the tower, they themselves might be able to escape punishment. Egwene would be executed. I'll get in, Gawain thought. I'll save her somehow. Then I'll talk some sense into her and bring her away from all of the Aes Sedai. Perhaps even talk sense into Bryn. We can all get back to Andor to help Elaine. He rode forward with renewed determination, banishing some of his exhaustion. To reach the command post, he had to ride through the camp followers, who outnumbered the actual troops. Cooks to fix the food, women to serve the food and wash the soiled dishes, wagon drivers to carry the food, wheelwrights to fix the wagons that carried the food, blacksmiths to make horseshoes for the horses that pulled the wagons that carried the food, merchants to buy the food, and quartermasters to organize it. Less reputable merchants who sought to profit off of the soldiers and their battle pay, and women who sought to do the same. Boys to run messages, hoping to someday carry a sword themselves. It was a complete mess. A half-shanty conglomeration of tents and shacks, each of a different hue, design, and state of disrepair. Even a capable general like Bryn could impose only so much order on camp followers. His men would keep the peace, more or less, but they couldn't force followers to keep military discipline. Gawain passed through the middle of it all, ignoring those who called to him, offering to shine his sword or sell him a sweet bun. The prices would be low. This was a place that fed off of soldiers. But with his war horse and finer clothing, he'd be marked as an officer. If he bought from one, the others would smell coin, and he could end up surrounded by all who hoped to sell to him. He ignored the calls, eyes forward, toward the army itself ahead. Its tents were generally organized in neat rows, grouped by squad and banner, though sometimes in smaller clusters. Gawain could have guessed the layout without seeing it. Bryn liked organization, but also believed strongly in delegation. Bryn would allow officers to run their camps as they wished, and that led to a setup that was less uniform, yet was far better at running itself. He headed directly for the palisade. The camp followers around him weren't easy to ignore, however. Their calls to him lingered in the air, together with the scents of cooking, privies, horses, and cheap perfume. The camp wasn't as crowded as a city, but it also wasn't as well maintained. Sweat mixed with burning cook fires, mixed with stagnant water, mixed with unwashed bodies. It made him want to hold a handkerchief to his face, though he refrained. It would make him look like a spoiled noble, turning his nose up at the common people. The stink, the confusion and the yells didn't help his mood any. He had to grit his teeth to keep himself from cursing at each hawker. A figure stumbled onto the pathway in front of him. He reined in. The woman wore a brown skirt and a white blouse, her hands grimy. "Out of the way," Gawain snapped. His mother would have been outraged to hear him speaking with such anger. Well, his mother was dead now, by Althor's hand. The woman in front of him looked up and ran back out of the pathway. She had light hair tied in a yellow kerchief and a faintly plump body. Gawain caught just a glimpse of her face as she turned. Gawain froze. That was an Aes Sedai face. It was unmistakable. He sat, shocked, as the woman pulled her kerchief down and hurried away. "Wait," he called, turning his horse. But the woman did not stop. He hesitated, lowering his arm as he saw the woman join a line of washwomen working between several wooden troughs a short distance away. If she was pretending to be a common woman, then she likely had her own blasted Aes Sedai reasons, and she wouldn't appreciate him exposing her. "Very well." Gawain forced down his annoyance. "Egwene." He had to focus on Egwene. When he reached the command palisade, the air improved measurably. A quartet of soldiers stood on guard, halberds held at their sides, steel caps gleaming and matched by breastplates emblazoned with Bryn's three stars. A banner bearing the flame of Tarvalin flapped beside the gateway. "Recruit?" asked one of the soldiers as Gawain rode up. The heavyset man bore a red stripe on his left shoulder, marking him as a watch sergeant. He carried a sword instead of a halberd. His breastplate barely fit his girth, and his chin bristled with red hairs.
"You'll have to meet with Captain Alden," the man said with a grunt. Big blue tent about a quarter of the way around the outside of the camp. You've got your own horse and sword. That'll get you good pay.
The man pointed toward a distant point in the main body of the army outside the palisade. That wouldn't do. He could see Bryn's banner flying inside. I'm not a recruit, Gawain said, turning challenge to get a better look at the man. My name is Gawain Trakand. I need to speak with Gareth Bryn immediately about a matter of some urgency. The soldier raised an eyebrow. Then he chuckled to himself. You don't believe me, Gawain said flatly.
You should go speak to Captain Alden, the man said lazily, pointing toward the distant tent again.
Gawain took a calming breath, trying to force down his irritation. If you'd just send for Bryn, you'd find that...
Are you going to be trouble?
The soldier asked, puffing himself up. The other men readied their halberds.
No trouble, Gawain said evenly. I just need...
If you're going to be in our camp, the soldier interrupted, stepping forward, you're going to have to learn how to do what you're told.
Gawain met the man's eyes.
Very well. We can do it this way. It will probably be faster anyway.
The sergeant laid a hand on his sword. Gawain kicked his feet free of the stirrups and pushed himself out of the saddle. It would be too hard to keep from killing the man from horseback. He slid his blade free as his feet hit the muddy ground, the sheath rasping like an inhaled breath. Gawain fell into Oak Shakes Its Branches, a form that wielded non-lethal blows often used by masters for training their students. It was also very effective against a large group all using different weapons. Before the sergeant had his sword free, Gawain slammed into him, ramming an elbow into his gut just beneath the poorly fitting breastplate. The man grunted and bent. Then Gawain knocked him on the side of the head with the hilt of his sword. The man should have known better than to wear his cap askew like that. Then Gawain fell into parting the silk to deal with the first halberdier. As another of the men screamed for help, Gawain's blade slashed across the first halberdier's breastplate with a ringing sound, forcing the man back. Gawain finished by sweeping the man's feet from under him, then fell into twisting the wind to block a pair of blows from the other two men. It was unfortunate, but he had to resort to striking the thighs of the two standing halberdiers. He'd have preferred to avoid wounding them, but fights, even one such as this against far less skilled opponents, became unpredictable the longer they lasted. One had to control the battlefield quickly and soundly, and that meant dropping the two soldiers, clutching their bleeding thighs. The sergeant was out cold from the wrap to the head, but the first halberdier was rising shakily. Gawain kicked the man's halberd aside, then planted a boot in his face, knocking him back and bloodying his nose. Challenge whinnied from behind, snorting and stamping the ground. The warhorse sensed a fight, but was well trained. He knew that when his reins were dropped, he was to remain still. Gawain wiped his blade on his trouser leg, then slid it back into its sheath, the wounded soldiers groaning on the ground. He patted Challenge on the nose and took up the reins again. Behind Gawain, nearby camp followers backed away, then ran. A group of soldiers from inside the palisade approached with bows drawn. That was not good. Gawain turned to face them, pulling his still-sheathed sword free from his belt and tossing it to the ground in front of the men.
I am unarmed, he said over the sounds of the wounded, and none of these four will die this day. Go and tell your general that a lone blade master just felled a squad of his guards in under 10 heartbeats. I'm an old student of his. He'll want to see me.
One of the men scrambled forward to take Gawain's fallen sword while another signaled to a runner. The others kept their bows raised. One of the fallen halberdiers began to crawl away. Gawain turned challenge at an angle, making ready to duck behind the horse if the soldiers moved to draw. He'd much preferred not to come to that, but of the two of them, Challenge was far more likely to survive a few shortbow shafts than Gawain. Several of the soldiers risked coming forward to help their fallen friends. The heavy-set watch sergeant was stirring, and he sat up, cursing under his breath. Gawain made no threatening motions.
Perhaps it had been a mistake to fight the men, but he had already wasted too much time. Egwene could be dead by now.
When a man like that sergeant tried to assert his authority, you really only had two options.
You could talk your way up through the ranks of the bureaucracy, convincing each soldier each step of the way that you were important, or you could make a disturbance. The second was faster, and the camp obviously had enough Aes Sedai to heal a few injured soldiers. Eventually, a small group of men strode out from inside the palisade. Their uniforms were sharp, their postures dangerous, their faces worn. At their head came a square-faced man with graying temples and a strong, stocky build. Gawain smiled. Bryn himself. The gamble had worked. The captain general surveyed Gawain, then moved on to a quick inspection of his fallen soldiers. At last he shook his head.
"Stand down," he said to his men. "Sergeant Cords."
The stocky sergeant stood up.
"Sir."
Bryn glanced back at Gawain.
"Next time a man comes to the gate claiming to be nobility and asking for me, send for an officer. Immediately. I don't care if the man has 2 months of scruffy beard and reeks of cheap ale. Understood?"
"Yes, sir,"
the sergeant said, blushing.
"Understood, sir."
"See your men to the infirmary, sergeant," Bryn said, still looking at Gawain. "You, come with me."
Gawain clenched his jaw. He hadn't received such an address from Garth Bryn since before he'd started shaving. Still, he couldn't really expect the man to be pleased. Just inside the palisade, Gawain spotted a young boy who was likely a stable hand or a messenger boy. He handed challenge to the wide-eyed youth, instructing him to see the horse cared for. Then Gawain retrieved his sword from the man holding it and hurried after Bryn.
"Garth," Gawain said, catching up.
"Hold your tongue, young man,"
Bryn said, not turning toward him.
"I haven't decided what I'm going to do with you."
Gawain snapped his mouth closed. That was uncalled for. Gawain was still brother to the rightful Queen of Andor, and would be first Prince of the Sword should Elaine take and hold the throne. Bryn should show him respect. But Bryn could be stubborn as a boar. Gawain held his tongue. They reached a tall, peaked tent with two guards at the front. Bryn ducked inside and Gawain followed. The inside was neat and clean, more so than Gawain had expected. The desk was stacked with rolled maps and orderly sheets of paper, and the pallets in the corner were rolled carefully, blankets folded with sharp angles. Bryn was obviously relying on someone meticulous to tidy up for him. Bryn clasped his hands behind his back, breastplate reflecting Gawain's face as he turned around.
"All right. Explain what you're doing here."
Gawain drew himself up.
"General," he said, "I think you mistake yourself. I'm no longer your student."
"I know," Bryn said curtly. "The boy I trained would never have pulled a childish stunt like that one to get my attention."
"The watch sergeant was belligerent, and I had no patience for the posturing of a fool. This seemed the best way."
"The best way to what?"
Bryn asked.
"Outrage me?"
"Look," Gawain said, "perhaps I was hasty, but I have an important task. You need to listen to me."
"And if I don't?" Bryn asked. "If I instead throw you out of my camp for being a spoiled princeling with too much pride and not enough sense?"
Gawain frowned.
"Be careful, Garth. I've learned a great deal since we last met. I think you'll find that your sword can no longer best mine as easily as it once did."
"I have no doubt of that," Bryn said. "Light boy, you always were a talented one. But you think that just because you're skilled with the sword, your words hold more weight? I should listen because you'll kill me if I don't? I thought I taught you far better than that."
Bryn had aged since Gawain had last seen him. But that age didn't bow Bryn down. It rested comfortably on his shoulders. A few more traces of white at his temples, a few more wrinkles around the eyes, yet strong and lean enough of body that he looked years younger than he was. One couldn't look at Garth Bryn and see anything other than a man in, certainly not past, his prime. Gawain locked eyes with the general, trying to keep the anger from boiling out. Bryn held his gaze, calm, solid, as a general should be, as Gawain should be. Gawain looked away, suddenly feeling ashamed of himself.
"Light,"
he whispered, releasing his sword and raising a hand to his head. He suddenly felt very, very tired.
I'm sorry, Garrett. You're right. I've been a fool.
Bryn grunted.
Good to hear you say that. I was beginning to wonder what had happened to you.
Gowan sighed, wiping his brow, wishing for something cool to drink. His anger melted away and he felt exhausted.
It has been a difficult year, he said, and I rode myself too hard getting here. I'm at the edge of my mind.
You aren't the only one, lad, Bryn said.
He took a deep breath and walked to a small serving table, poured a cup of something for Gowan. It was only warm tea, but Gowan took it thankfully and sipped.
These are times to test men, Bryn said, pouring himself a cup.
He took a sip and grimaced.
What?
Gowan asked, glancing down at his cup.
It's nothing. I despise this stuff.
Then why drink it? Gowan asked.
It's supposed to improve my health, Bryn grumbled.
Before Gowan could ask further, the large general continued,
So are you going to make me throw you in the stocks before you'll tell me why you decided to fight your way into my command post?
Gowan stepped forward.
Garrett, it's Egwene. They have her.
The White Tower, Aes Sedai?
Gowan nodded urgently.
I know.
Bryn took another drink, then grimaced again.
We have to go for her,
Gowan said.
I came to ask you for help. I intend to mount a rescue.
Bryn snorted softly.
A rescue? And how do you intend to get into the White Tower? Even the Aiel couldn't break into that city.
They didn't want to, Gowan said. But I don't need to take the city. I just need to sneak a small force in, then get one person out. Every rock has its cracks. I'll find a way.
Bryn set his cup aside. He looked at Gowan, firm, weathered face, an icon of nobility.
But tell me this, lad. How are you going to get her to come out with you?
Gowan started.
Why, she'll be happy to come. Why wouldn't she?
Because she's forbidden us to rescue her, Bryn said, clasping his hands behind his back again. Or so I've been able to gather. The Aes Sedai told me little. One would think they'd be more trusting toward a man they depend on to run this siege of theirs. Anyway, the Amalyn can communicate with them somehow, and she's instructed them to leave her be.
What? That was ridiculous. Obviously the Aes Sedai in camp were fudging the facts.
Bryn, she's imprisoned. The Aes Sedai I heard talking said that she was being beaten daily. They'll execute her.
I don't know, Bryn said. She's been with them for weeks now, and they haven't killed her yet.
They'll kill her, Gowan said urgently. You know they will. Perhaps you parade a fallen enemy before your soldiers for a time, but eventually you have to mount his head on a pike to let them know he's dead and gone. You know I'm right.
Bryn regarded him, then nodded.
Perhaps I do. But there's still nothing I can do. I'm bound by my oaths, Gowan. I can't do anything unless that girl instructs me to.
You'd let her die?
If that's what it takes to keep my oath, then yes.
If Bryn was bound by oath, well, he'd sooner hear an Aes Sedai tell a lie than see Garrett Bryn break his word. But Egwene, there had to be something he could do.
I'll try to get you an audience with some of the Aes Sedai I serve, Bryn said. Perhaps they can do something. If you persuade them that a rescue is needed and that the Amalyn would want it, then we'll see.
Gowan nodded. It was something, at least.
Thank you.
Bryn waved indifferently.
Though I should see you in the stocks, for wounding three of my men, if nothing else.
Have an Aes Sedai heal them, Gowan said. From what I've heard, you've no lack of sisters to bully you.
Bah, Bryn said. I can rarely get them to heal anyone unless the soldier's life is threatened. I had a man take a bad spill while riding the other day, and I was told that healing would only teach him to be reckless. Pain is its own lesson, the blasted woman said. Perhaps next time he won't see fit to make sport for his friends while riding.
Gawain grimaced. But surely they'll make an exception for those men. After all, an enemy did do the wounding.
We'll see, Bryn said. The sisters rarely visit the soldiers. They've their own business to be about.
There's one in the outer camp now, Gawain said absently, glancing over his shoulder.
A younger girl, dark hair without the ageless face?
No, this was an Aes Sedai. I could tell because of the face. She was kind of plump, with lighter hair.
Probably just scouting for warders, Bryn said, sighing. They do that.
I don't think so, Gawain said, glancing over his shoulder. She was hiding among the washwomen. As he thought about it, he realized that she could very well be a spy for the White Tower loyalists. Bryn's frown deepened. Perhaps he had the same thoughts.
Show me, he said, striding toward the tent flaps.
He threw them aside, walking back out into the morning light, Gawain following.
You never did explain what you are doing here, Gawain, Bryn said as they walked through the orderly camp, soldiers saluting their general as he passed.
I told you, Gawain said, hand resting comfortably on the pommel of his sword. I am going to find a way to get Egwene out of that death trap.
I didn't mean what you're doing in my camp. I meant why you were in the area in the first place. Why aren't you back in Camelon, helping your sister?
You have news of Elaine, Gawain said, stopping. Light, he should have asked earlier. He really was tired. I heard that she was in your camp earlier. She's gone back to Camelon. Is she safe?
She hasn't been with us for a long while, Bryn said, but she seems to be doing well.
He stopped, glancing at Gawain.
You mean you don't know?
What?
Well, rumors are unreliable, Bryn said. But I have confirmed many of them with the Aes Sedai who have been traveling to Camelon to listen for news. Your sister holds the Lion Throne. It seems that she's undone much of the mess your mother left for her.
Gawain took a deep breath. Thank the light, he thought, closing his eyes. Elaine lived. Elaine held the throne. He opened his eyes, and the overcast sky seemed a little more bright. He continued walking, Bryn falling into step beside him.
You really didn't know, Bryn said. Where have you been, lad? You're the first Prince of the Sword now, or you will be once you return to Camelon. Your place is at your sister's side.
Egwene first.
You made an oath, Bryn said sternly. Before me. Have you forgotten?
No, Gawain said. But if Elaine has the throne, then she's safe for now. I'll get Egwene and tow her back to Camelon where I can keep an eye on her, or I can keep an eye on both of them. Bryn snorted.
I think I'd like to watch you trying that first part, he noted. But regardless, why weren't you there when Elaine was trying to take the throne? What have you been doing that is more important than that?
I grew entangled, Gawain said, eyes forward.
Entangled? Bryn asked. You were at the White Tower when all of this...
He cut off, falling silent. The two walked side by side for a moment.
Where did you hear sisters talking about Egwene's capture? Bryn asked. How would you know she's being punished?
Gawain said nothing.
Blood and bloody ashes, Bryn exclaimed.
The general rarely cursed.
I knew that the person leading those raids against me was too well informed, and here I was looking for a leak among my officers.
It doesn't matter now.
I'll judge that, Bryn said. You've been killing my men, leading raids against me.
Leading raids against the rebels, Gawain said, turning hard eyes on Bryn. You may blame me for bullying my way into your camp, but do you honestly expect me to feel guilty for helping the White Tower against the force besieging it? Bryn fell silent. Then he nodded curtly.
Very well. But that makes you an enemy commander.
No longer, Gawain said. I've left that command.
But
I helped them, Gawain said. I no longer do. Nothing I see here will return to your enemies, Bryn. I swear it on the light. Bryn didn't respond immediately.
They passed tents, likely for the high officers, approaching the palisade wall.
Very well, Bryn said. I can trust you haven't changed enough to break your word.
I wouldn't turn against that oath, Gowan said harshly. How could you think that I would?
I've had experience with unexpected renunciations of oaths lately, Bryn said. I said I believe you, lad, and I do. But you still haven't explained why you didn't return to Camelin.
Egwene was with the Aes Sedai, Gowan said. As far as I knew, Elaine was as well. This seemed to be a good place to be, although I wasn't certain I liked Elida's authority.
And what is Egwene to you? Bryn asked softly.
Gowan met his eyes.
I don't know, he admitted. I wish I did.
Strangely, Bryn chuckled.
I see, and I understand. Come, let's find this Aes Sedai you think you saw.
I did see her, Gareth, Gowan said, nodding to the guards as they passed out the gates.
The men saluted Bryn, but watched Gowan as they would a black lance, as well they should.
We shall see what we find, Bryn said. Regardless, once I get you a meeting with the Aes Sedai leaders, I want your word that you'll go back to Camelin. Leave Egwene to us. You need to help Elaine. It's your place to be in Andor.
I could say the same for you.
Gowan surveyed the teeming followers' camp.
Where had the woman been?
You could, Bryn said gruffly, but it wouldn't be true. Your mother saw to that.
Gowan glanced at him.
She put me out to pasture, Gowan, banished me and threatened me with death.
Impossible.
Bryn looked grim.
I felt the same way, but it is true nonetheless. The things she said, they stung, Gowan. That they did indeed.
That was all Bryn said, but from him it spoke volumes. Gowan had never heard the man offer a word of discontent about his station or his orders. He had been loyal to Morghaes, loyal with the kind of steadfastness a ruler could only hope for. Gowan had never known a man more sure or a man less likely to complain.
It must have been part of some scheme, Gowan said. You know, Mother. If she hurt you, there was a reason.
Bryn shook his head.
No reason other than foolish love for that fop, Gabriel. She nearly let her clouded head ruin Andor.
She'd never, Gowan snapped. Gareth, you of all people should know that.
I should, Bryn said, lowering his voice. And I wish I did.
She had another motive, Gowan said stubbornly.
He felt the heat of anger rise within him again. Around them, peddlers glanced at the two, but said nothing. They probably knew not to approach Bryn.
But now we'll never know it. Not now that she's dead. Curse Althor! The day can't come soon enough when I can run him through.
Bryn looked at Gowan sharply.
Althor saved Andor, son. Or as near to it as a man could.
How could you say that? Gowan said, pulling his hand away. How could you speak well of that monster? He killed my mother.
I don't know if I believe those rumors or not, Bryn said, rubbing his chin. But if I do, lad, then perhaps he did Andor a favor. You don't know how bad it got there at the end.
I can't believe I'm hearing this, Gowan said, lowering his hand to his sword. I won't hear her name soiled like that, Bryn. I mean it.
Bryn looked him directly in the eyes. His gaze was so solid, like eyes carved of granite.
I'll always speak truth, Gowan, no matter who challenges me on it. It's hard to hear. Well, it was harder to live. No good comes of spreading complaints. But her son needs to know. In the end, Gowan, your mother turned against Andor by embracing Gabriel. She needed to be removed. If Althor did that for us, then we have need to thank him.
Gowan shook his head, rage and shock fighting one another. This was Gareth Bryn?
These aren't the words of a spurned lover,
Bryn said, face set as if shoving aside emotions. He spoke softly as he and Gowan walked, camp followers giving them a wide berth.
I can accept that a woman could lose affection for a man and bestow it on another. Morgaze the woman I can forgive. But Morgaze the queen? She gave the kingdom to that snake. She sent her allies to be beaten and imprisoned. She wasn't right in her mind. Sometimes, when a soldier's arm festers, it needs to be cut free to save the man's life. I'm pleased at Elaine's success, and it is a wound to speak these words. But you have to bury that hatred of Althor. He wasn't the problem. Your mother was.
Gowan kept his teeth clenched.
Never, he thought. I will never forgive Althor. Not for this.
I can see the intent behind that look, Bryn said. All the more reason to get you back to Andor. You'll see. If you don't trust me, ask your sister. See what she says of it.
Gowan nodded sharply. Enough of that. Ahead, he noted the place where he'd seen the woman. He glanced toward the distant lines of washwomen, then turned and strode toward them, edging between two merchants with pungent pens full of chickens selling eggs.
This way,
he said, perhaps too sharply. He didn't look to see if Bryn followed. Soon the general caught up to him, looking displeased, but he kept his peace. They walked down a crowded, twisting pathway among people in browns and dull grays and soon reached the line of women kneeling before two long wooden troughs of slowly flowing water. Men stood at the far end, pouring water down the troughs, and the line of women washed clothing in the sudsy one, then rinsed them off in the cleaner trough. No wonder the ground was so wet. At least here it smelled of suds and cleanliness. The women had their sleeves rolled up to their upper arms, and most of them chatted idly as they worked, rubbing clothing against boards in the troughs. They were all dressed in those same brown skirts he had seen on the Aes Sedai. Gowan rested his hand idly on his pommel, inspecting the women from behind.
"Which one?" Bryn asked.
"Just a moment," Gowan said. There were dozens of women. Had he really seen what he'd thought? Why would an Aes Sedai be in this camp, of all places? Surely Elida wouldn't send an Aes Sedai out to spy. Their faces made them too easy to recognize. Of course, if they were that easy to recognize, why couldn't he spot her now? And then he saw her. She was one of the only women who wasn't chatting with those around her. She knelt with her head bowed, the yellow kerchief tied around her head, shading her face, a few locks of light hair sticking out from under the cloth. Her posture was so subservient that he almost missed her, but the shape of her body stood out. She was plump, and that kerchief was the only yellow one in the line. Gowan strode down the line of working women, several of whom stood up, hands on hips as they explained in no uncertain terms that soldiers with their big feet and awkward elbows should stay out of the way of women at work. Gowan ignored them, pressing on until he stood beside the yellow kerchief.
This is insane, Gowan thought. There's never in all of history been an Aes Sedai who could force herself to adopt that kind of posture.
Bryn stepped up beside him. Gowan stooped down, trying to get a look at the woman's face. She bowed down further, scrubbing more furiously at the shirt in the trough before her.
Woman, Gowan said, may I see your face?
She didn't respond. Gowan looked up at Bryn. Hesitantly, the general reached down and pushed back the plump woman's kerchief. The face underneath was distinctly Aes Sedai, with that unmistakable ageless quality. She didn't look up. She just kept working.
I said it wouldn't work, said a hefty woman nearby.
The woman rose and waddled down the line, wearing a tent-like dress of green and brown.
My lady, I told her, you can do as you wish. I ain't the one to refuse such as you, but someone's going to notice you.
You're in charge of the washwomen, Bryn said.
The large woman nodded firmly, her red curls bouncing.
Indeed I am, General.
She turned to the Aes Sedai, curtsying.
Lady Tagrin, I did warn you. Light burn me, but I did. I'm right sorry.
The woman called Tagrin bowed her head. Were those tears on her cheeks? Was that even possible?
What was going on?
My lady,
Bryn said, squatting down beside her.
Are you Aes Sedai? If you are, and you command me to leave, I will do so without question.
A good way to approach it. If she really was Aes Sedai, she couldn't lie.
I'm not Aes Sedai,
the woman whispered. Bryn looked up at Gawain, frowning. What did it mean if she said that? An Aes Sedai couldn't lie, so... The woman softly said,
My name is Shemeran. I was Aes Sedai once, but no more. Not since.
She looked down again.
Please, just leave me to work in my shame.
I will, Bryn said.
Then he hesitated.
But I'll need you to talk to some sisters from the camp first. They'd have my ears if I don't bring you in to speak with them.
The woman, Shemeran, sighed but stood up.
Come on, Bryn said to Gawain. I have no doubt that they'll also want to talk to you. Best to get this over with quickly.